Here's the thing about a minority government. You don't know how well it will work until it either works or it doesn't. Every single leader who's ever led one starts with big plans to get big things done.
To those who did not vote for us, know that we will work every single day for you. We will govern for everyone.
And then the cameras shut off and the meetings start and everybody haggles. And in the 5 weeks since Canadians' votes were counted, our Prime Minister has done a lot of haggling. He's met with potential allies in government.
It's a pleasure to welcome the leader of the NDP into the office. Opportunity to talk about the many things that we have in common in our perspectives.
He's met with the leader of the official opposition.
Today, Justin Trudeau met federal Conservative leader Andrew Scheer, and the conversations aren't always easy.
He's met with the man who perhaps wants to lead the official opposition.
What a pleasure to welcome Premier Ford to Ottawa. Opportunity for us to sit down and talk together about a lot of shared priorities, actually.
It's a fun to be here with the Prime Minister, and a lot of the people that voted for the Prime Minister, not all, but a lot of them, voted for me, and people expect us to work together.
And Justin Trudeau needs something from almost all of them, so they'll make him pay for it. Which of these deals that have been struck in back rooms over the past month will actually result in legislation? Which of the many promises will be kept once the cameras come back on? And what will our parliament look like when it finally gets back, at least we hope, to work next week? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Cormac McSweeney is the Parliament Hill reporter for City News, for Rogers Radio, and for us, right here. Hello, Cormac.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm about to dive back into politics after a much-needed break.
It's fun. There's always something happening in the world of politics, whether it's putting more gray hairs on my head or not. There's always something going on.
Well, so yeah, you've been in the middle of it for the last 5 weeks since the vote, and in the aftermath of the election, everybody was kind of speculating about how this parliament would actually function. And I guess there've been a lot of discussion amongst the leaders about how it will. Do we have any idea about what's going to happen when we sit back down next week?
We do have a better idea. I mean, on election night, the big question was, are we going to see some sort of coalition take place? Will the Prime Minister be cutting deals? Is he just going to plow through and try and govern as if he was just still in a majority government and sort of dare the opposition to take him down? Well, it wasn't long after the election that the Prime Minister kind of put to bed the conversations about possible coalitions. He said he had no interest in having any sort of formal or informal coalition with one of the other parties. Now, he's in an interesting scenario where he only needs one of the big three opposition parties to support him on confidence bills. So that would be like the throne speech, which will happen on the first day back in Parliament on December 5th, or the budget, or the economic update. Any spending bill is considered a confidence bill in the House of Commons. So all he needs is the Bloc Québécois, the Conservatives, or the NDP to support him, and his government will survive. And so what we've seen since the election is the Prime Minister sort of taking the approach of trying to see which party he can work with on each issue. And the funny thing is, it's actually something that has sort of been suggested, kind of alluded to by a former Prime Minister who was the last prime minister who ran a minority government, Stephen Harper. He was asked if he had any advice for Justin Trudeau, and he said he's not one to give advice to the Liberals, or let alone Justin Trudeau. But he did say that if you craft your bills in which the country will believe in them, and you word them properly, where most Canadians will be behind them, then you'll inevitably find another party that will support that bill. It seems like there might be a little bit more of a cooperative approach, at least at this point, from the Liberals, where they've really tried to consult a little bit more with the opposition parties. But in the end, I think when it comes down to it in the House of Commons, they're going to be putting forward their bills as they crafted them, and then it'll be up to the opposition parties to support them or not. And I think that whichever way those bills will be crafted, they'll likely be crafted with the mindset that you know, this might be where the Bloc Québécois would support it, or this might be the bill where the NDP might support it, or heck, we're talking about something we know only the Conservatives will support. And so, you know, every decision made is a decision by the government that will, you know, the mindset will be whether we want to force our government to fall or whether we want to continue governing.
Well, tell me about that consultation process, because I think a lot of us have just kind of seen videos or heard audio of various leaders and or premiers meeting with Prime Minister Trudeau over the last few weeks, but we don't really know what's going on in those discussions.
No, they're held behind closed doors, and all we really know is what we've been told by the different political leaders who have met with the Prime Minister after they sat down with the Prime Minister. So he made it a point to sit down with every opposition leader, from the main opposition leader, Conservative leader Andrew Scheer, to the Bloc Québécois leader Yves-François Blanchet, and then of course with NDP leader Jagmeet Singh, and then the now ousted leader of the Green Party, or I guess she resigned, Elizabeth May, but she will be kind of heading up the Green Party in the House of Commons. And so that was more of a courtesy meeting because she doesn't hold the numbers to actually have a balance of power in the House of Commons. But nonetheless, he even sat down with her and chatted about different priorities.
What's Trudeau trying to do in a meeting like that? Is he trying to just figure out what bills he can advance that he knows Party X will support and set his agenda that way? Or is he trying to bring them on side and form something that he, or bring them to his point of view on various issues?
It could be a little bit of both, but you also know in politics these days that trying to get someone to just come over to your side and your point of view doesn't always work. But nonetheless, sitting them down, having those conversations, at least the appearance of them, is that there's some cooperation or a willingness to cooperate in a minority parliament situation. Let's remember the election night speech from Justin Trudeau was heavily criticized because of the fact that a lot of people thought that it wasn't humble enough for the fact that he had been demoted from a majority to a minority government, and that he didn't really take the message that Canadians were sending to him. But in the days that have followed, he's really tried to express that fact, that he has heard that Canadians want to see a more cooperative approach to politics, and that's what he's trying to show through these meetings. But he's really trying to, I think, in some ways, just sort of figure out the lay of the land from the opposition parties. And it is just trying to say, okay, well, where can we work together? What do you want to see us do as the new government? And what would you like to support? And of course, every party's going to have its different list of priorities. We heard them all just in the election. It wasn't too long ago. So I think the Liberals do have an idea of where these parties want to go, but it's also just sort of extending that olive branch to see if there is a willingness to sort of get in on the conversation or not. And, you know, we'll see through the workings of this minority parliament, how many more conversations the Prime Minister has with the opposition leaders to continue to reach out to them, because that's the important thing. A minority situation is a very different beast than a majority situation. And in many ways, it's the same. I mean, you know, bills still get passed the same way, but the makeup of the committees, the makeup of the House of Commons is very different. And then also the public relations game that politicians always play is very different as well. I was there during the minority years of, or some of the minority years of the Conservative government. And I tell you, the way Parliament was being run was a lot more vicious, a lot more partisan, and people were all preparing for the next election. And that's what a minority scenario is like. It's very different. The knives are out almost constantly. And so I think that's something that a lot of rookie MPs and even some veterans will have to get used to again as we head into this new reality.
Do we know of any specific policies that there does appear to be support lined up for and that we might see advanced by the Liberals, just to put a couple of W's in the win column?
I think there are a lot of priorities that the Liberals had during the election in which you can point to at least one of the other opposition parties, the main opposition parties, and say, yeah, they're likely to support this or maybe this. Maybe the Liberals have to get a bit more ambitious. They might have to tweak some of their bills in order to make sure that those bills get passed by one of the opposition parties. Or maybe they take a more cooperative approach in terms of if there's an opposition-dominated committee that is trying to pass a certain amendment to a bill, that they accept that and push it through with that amendment. We've seen it happen even in the majority government, where they allowed amendments being put forward by opposition members and ended up keeping that as a part of the bill just to pass the bill, even though they had a majority. One example is the issue of edibles, which will be legal soon in Canada for sale, in cannabis. It was the NDP pushing for a more strict timeline as to when edibles would be brought into market, because there was no timeline in the original bill from the Liberals. And the NDP said, well, there's no way you can make an argument that it shouldn't be more than 1 year after the fact. And so they ended up agreeing to that and adding that in. And that's why we're going to see edibles soon hit the store shelves. But that's something that we'll have to see, is how the Liberals plan to try and push forward with this. But in terms of priorities and actual issues that the government is going to be pushing forward, they've made it very clear that the first real big legislative initiative that they want to push through is their promise of a middle class tax break. And that's where the first $15,000 of your income will not be taxed. And that essentially, they say, would save the average Canadian around $600. So that's a big promise that I think they can easily push through, because a lot of people were pushing tax breaks in the last election, and it's something the Conservatives would likely support. But then you move into some more trickier situations, like, let's say, climate change, where they have this promise of net zero emissions by 2050. But the question is, how do you get there? And will their plan be ambitious enough to bring in, let's say, the Green Party, the NDP, or even the Bloc Québécois? Medical assistance in dying, there have to be tweaks to that bill, thanks to a court ruling. And that might be interesting, because it was a very sensitive debate that took place in the House of Commons when the Liberals first pushed that through after forming government. But they had to, again, through the courts. And so this is something they kind of have to address, thanks to the courts. And it'll be interesting to see the debates that happen there. But then you also have gun control, which the new public safety minister, Bill Blair, I asked him when we might expect something on their promise to ban assault style weapons and give municipalities the right to possibly ban handguns within their jurisdiction. He said they're going to work on that as soon as possible, that the public safety is a priority for this government. But when it came to exact timelines, he wouldn't say. He did say that there need to be discussions with the opposition moving forward on that. So, again, another example of where they might want to work to cooperate.
How much of this is about them simply saying, yes, we want to do that as soon as possible, and then later blaming the opposition for not working with them? Because that seems like what you're describing in a number of places.
Yeah, you know, that's always something that we see in a minority government. It's an easy out for the government to blame the opposition for slowing things down. And we've seen it time and time again, where whether it's provincial or federal governments who are dealing with minority situations, they will say, these guys are slowing us down. Give us a majority so we can actually get Parliament moving and get these bills passed to help you as a voter, as a Canadian, or whatever the issue might be. And so I think we can expect that in the next election, when the Liberals will be looking for a majority mandate again, that's an argument that they'll put forward. The opposition will likely be putting forward the argument that, well, if they weren't trying to trigger an election, or if they actually wanted to work together, maybe they would have listened. And these are the arguments I think we will hear time and time again throughout this minority government. Maybe not right at the start. I think everyone's going to take a little bit more of a humble, cooperative tone. Maybe not. Maybe not every party. But in general, I think we will see a little bit of humility at the start. And then slowly, as we move on, as people prepare and build up their war chests in their political parties for the next election, and everything becomes a little bit clear about who's leading what party into the next election, that's when the viciousness will really come out in the politics. And I'm just judging that based on my coverage of other minority parliaments. It's not always the case. It's not the rule. But politics tends to follow certain traditions, and partisanship and nastiness in minority situations usually is one of them.
Well, you gave me the perfect segue, because I wanted to ask you, you've talked a lot about how Justin Trudeau is preparing to sell himself in this parliament. What about Andrew Scheer and the Conservatives? What was that meeting like, I guess, first between Trudeau and Scheer? And second of all, how ready are the Conservatives to take up the mantle of the opposition? Because there have been no shortage of stories. We've even done one about kind of internal division right now.
Yeah, well, this is the big issue. And I don't think the Conservatives will have to wait long before deciding where they go from here. In April, there will be a mandatory leadership review for Conservative leader Andrew Scheer. And that will determine whether that party has to be launched into a new leadership race or whether they stick with Scheer at the helm and try and push through for the next election to take the Trudeau Liberals out. If they stick with Scheer, I think we could see them start to plan for the next election sooner rather than later. But if they're launched into another leadership race, well, then, you know, you're going to want to have to give more time for the new leader to get their feet under them, to get prepared, to get ready. How long is that leadership race going to be? Is it going to be a long one? Probably not, because it's a minority situation. So there's a lot to work out for the Conservatives right now. And Andrew Scheer is facing now attacks both on the left and right, and I shouldn't say left, but more center, red Tories, if you will, and even the more social conservative wing of the party is now attacking Andrew Scheer about his leadership. But the interesting thing about this leadership review that will be taking place, unlike some of the other parties in Canadian politics, the Conservatives will not be doing it by a one-member, one-vote leadership review, that they will have delegates at their convention representing constituents, and those people who have been chosen, they'll get to vote. And so it's not exactly, you know, the whole membership en masse voting. It will be a strategically placed people. And some have come out and said that that's problematic, that there are issues with that. They feel it might be stacked in favor of Scheer. Others who are not deterred and waging campaigns against Scheer. And then there are Scheer supporters who are speaking out and saying, look, Stephen Harper didn't win his first time around against Paul Martin, but then he came back and took minority, and that led to a majority government a couple of elections later. So have faith, stick with the guy, and we can win this one. But, you know, that there's a lot of soul searching going on right now within the Conservative Party, and they kind of have to work out those issues around leadership before they can really move on. But the tone that we're hearing from Andrew Scheer, despite the questions around his leadership, he's still going hard after Justin Trudeau and the Liberals, and he's taking a strong stance against them. So he might not be as cooperative on a lot of issues in this minority parliament, but he's got bigger issues to worry about than Justin Trudeau and the Liberals right now. He's got to make sure he smooths things over with people on the social conservative and the red Tory side of the Conservative Party to make sure he survives that leadership review.
And at the same time, Trudeau is taking meetings with premiers. And, you know, one of the things I noticed was that Doug Ford went up to Ottawa last week and they sat down and they sounded really friendly compared to at least the tone between Trudeau and Scheer.
Look, the Doug Ford situation is a fascinating one. Ford was railing against the carbon tax. He mandated that every gas pump in the province would have an anti-carbon tax sticker, or at least showing you where your taxes are going. And it created a lot of friction with the federal Liberals in the months leading up to the election. Premier Ford pulled back for the election campaign itself. A lot of people said it was because the federal Conservatives would suffer because of Ford's unpopularity in the polls in Ontario. And so he pulled back a lot. He did not campaign with Scheer. They were not together. His government didn't have the legislature return until after the election date. But after everything was done, despite the fact that Prime Minister Justin Trudeau really railed against Ford hard in Ontario ridings and campaigned against Ford as a picture of all conservatives across the country, and said a lot of, you know, not kind things about the way the Ford government has been running
the
province.
They were vicious, yeah.
They were pretty harsh in their criticisms and attacks on Doug Ford and the Conservatives. But in the end, Doug Ford leaves all of that and says, look, my family is in politics. That's how I was raised. His family was in politics. That's how he was raised. We both know the game. Now, this is a different scenario. The election is over. Let's all move on. Let's all work together. And the fascinating thing is, it looks like Doug Ford is trying to be that symbol of unity within the provinces. You have a lot of conservative premiers who have been attacking Trudeau and the Liberal government hard, and there are some big issues that need to be dealt with, and you can't just ignore the federal government. Whether it be the prairie frustrations and prairie separation movements that we've been hearing a lot about, or maybe some issues out east, Doug Ford has said that he wants to try and bring everybody together. And he's showing that with a premier's meeting that's happening next week, where he's bringing all of his fellow premiers together to try and discuss some of these issues. There's also PharmaCare, where you're going to have intense negotiations with the provinces to bring them on side in terms of what the Liberals are hoping to achieve on PharmaCare. Gun control, some infrastructure dollars as well, because, you know, Premier Ford is looking for some money from the feds to pay for some of the subways right. He's been promising. So it's a little bit of a tit for tat, quid pro quo. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And if Premier Ford is able to help Justin Trudeau, and whether this is actually something that they discussed and laid out together is probably doubtful, but I think there's an understanding there that if Doug Ford becomes this unifier for the provinces and things calm down for the Trudeau Liberals, they won't be so shy about giving Premier Doug Ford some of the money he's been looking for a lot of the infrastructure projects he wants to get going right now. And let's face it, with Premier Ford and his government not doing the best in the polls, they do need a little bit of boost right now, and they're looking to the feds to possibly change the image of Ford in Ontario.
Minority governments make strange bedfellows.
They really do. They really do. But, you know, there are a lot of people who came out and said, good on Ford.
Sure.
He could have taken it one way. He could have taken it one way and really held it against Trudeau. But he's kind of taken the high road out of all of this and not trying to turn this into just a nasty, bitter debate that will lead up to the next election, whenever that will be, because it's a minority. And he wants to try and cooperate and work together. And that could benefit both Trudeau and Ford in this scenario. They both have something to gain from working together. And I think that's what we might see. But again, it's a minority parliament. Anything can happen. One small thing could tick somebody off, and then that could be it. Politics is a unique beast, and we'll just have to wait to see how this all plays out.
Thanks for taking the time, Cormac.
Anytime.
Cormac McSweeney, our man on the Hill. I always wanted to call someone that. That was The Big Story. For more from us, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can find a lot more episodes and a lot more Cormac right there. You can talk to us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. Cormac's on Twitter too. He's CMac on the Hill. And of course, everywhere you get podcasts, we are there. Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, PodTracker, you pick. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.